It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. In 1994, Leonard Meyer described minimal music like this: little sense of goal direction motion. Music does not seem to move from one place to another. Within any musical segment, there may be some sense of direction, but frequently the segments fail to lead to or imply one another. They simply follow one another. We'll celebrate the 80th birthday of one of the architects of minimalism, composer Steve Reich, on today's What's New. Steve Reich has been called our greatest living composer, among the great composers of the century by the New York Times, America's greatest living composer by the Village Voice, and the most original musical thinker of our time by The New Yorker. We'll speak to Steve about minimalism and composing, but first let's sample a remix of his six pianos. It's from a Decca release called Reworks. The Mr. Scruff remix of Steve Reich's Six Pianos on What's New. We heard Piano Circus reworked on a Decca release. You can find out more online at WBAA.org, including our playlist and podcasts. I spoke with Steve Reich and asked about his 2003 work, Cello Counterpoint.
The piece I wrote preceding UR Variations was a piece called Cello Counterpoint from Maya Beiser, the cellist who used to be with Bang on a Can. And basically it's part of the Counterpoint series, so it's for a soloist and then multiple versions of themselves. In this case, it's for eight cellos. She plays one live, and seven of them are pre-recorded. Could do it with eight cellos, but it's very hard. So I think for the moment, probably better with solo and tape. It's a very, I think it's a very good piece, but it's the kind of piece where you really work at it, and very intricate, and a lot of like really getting in there. You're achieving something that's really highly crafted and a good piece, and certainly has a lot of emotion to it.
Steve Reich discussing Cello Counterpoint. Steve Reich's Cello Counterpoint, played by Maya Beiser on What's New. I'm John Clare. Find out more at WBAA.org.
How was it to decide to start your own ensemble? How did that begin? That there were just, what, originally just a couple of you, three of you?
Yeah.
And then kind of
basically
morphed.
It was, you know, if I don't, nobody else will. So, you know, what am I going to do? Wrap it up in an envelope and send it to people? A piece like Piano Phase, which is one of the, you know, back in, I was writing in 66, finished in 67. At that stage of my life, you know, people would look at that and just say, well, you know, this is a period of time in musical history when if you didn't write like Boulez or Stockhausen or Berio on the one hand, or like John Cage on the other, you were just irrelevant. Totally, completely, absolutely irrelevant. Now, you can't imagine such a world, but that's the way it actually was in the academic musical world and even in the not-so-academic musical world, because the non-academic world was John Cage. John Cage basically sounds the same as Stockhausen and Boulez, only he arrives at his rhythmless, melodicless, pulseless, harmonicless music through chance procedures, and they arrive at the same kind of music through extremely detailed, worked-out procedures. But there was, you know, a lot of discussion, you know, about the end product being very, very much the same. And, of course, they both came out of Schoenberg. So it was definitely not a time when people looking at a piece like Piano Phase would do anything but say, this is infantile, and not even try to play it, which, of course, is very difficult to play. So what I did was write music that I could play. I was a very limited performer, and I just simplified everything so that I and some other performers, a friend from Juilliard, Arthur Murphy, and a friend that I met when I was in San Francisco, John Gibson, who now plays with Phil Glass, woodwind player. Arthur was a pianist. It was my first group. And then later, Phil Glass joined my group, and James Tenney, the composer. And we did pieces like Four Organs and Phase Patterns, which were the electric organ pieces of 1970. And then I began drumming, the piece drumming. I was a drummer when I was 14, which is really why I went, you know, got involved with all the African stuff and whatnot. But I then met Russell Hartenberger, who was doing his master's degree in Indian drumming, in South Indian drumming, Murdungam, up at Wesleyan. I met Bob Becker, who was out of Eastman. Jim Price was teaching at Manhattan School, still is. These are the sort of core of the ensemble that still exists to this day. And I met them in 1970, 71 when I was working on drumming. In a nutshell, the idea of having an ensemble was do it yourself because no one else is going to. And what's more, if you do it, you're going to do it right. And people will love it, hate it, whatever, but they really hear what I have in mind. And to my amazement, I started to make a living as a composer-performer because people don't pay the composer very much until you get much older and much better known. But they do pay for concerts. And really, I made a living because I started going to Europe.
Steve Reich, speaking on What's New. Let's hear a July 2016 release of Radio Rewrite by Steve Reich. Radio Rewrite by Steve Reich on What's New. We heard Ensemble Signal and conductor Brad Lubman from a Harmonia Mundi release. There's more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. That's WBAA.org. We're celebrating the 80th birthday of Steve Reich.
Let's talk a little bit about technology and how, as things progress, how that affects you and your compositions.
Well, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Basically, after Three Tales, which was finished in 1992, which was the video opera I did with Beryl Coro, the second one we did after The Cave, which you can see in here on the Nonesuch recording of the DVD and the CD. I really wanted to spend time just writing music, and without any particular electronics, but just working music.
How do you compose, literally? Is it pencil and paper? Is it something you sit down at the keyboard?
I do everything to do with pitch, like working out the notes, working out these harmonies I told you about at the piano, and writing it down into my music notebook, which is regular manuscript paper. Then I move over to my computer, and on my computer I run Sibelius, the notation program, and Sibelius triggers a software sampler called Reason, which you may have heard of, which has samples of, you know, flutes, oboe, English horn, clarinets, woo for voices, and for tenors, so on and so forth. And therefore, when I write, I can play back the notation from Reason. And I go back and forth between the piano and the computer, you know, as I in the process of working.
In violin phase, two violins are recorded and played back together at first. They are then made to go slowly out of sync by adding silence to one of the tapes. A new melody is formed by the interaction of the two out-of-sync instruments and is then accented by a third violin. This process is repeated with variations throughout the rest of the piece. Violin Phase by Steve Reich on What's New. Shem Gabori played the violin. Find out more about this and other shows online at WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. We're featuring Steve Reich. Coming up, reimagined piano and remixed drumming. This was originally called Octet, but was changed to 8 lines by Steve Reich. Composed in 1979, we'll hear Ransom Wilson conduct the New York Solisti on What's New. Eight Lines by Steve Reich with the New York Solisti and Ransom Wilson conducting on What's New. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org.
Does it help to know who you're writing for in
music? It's important to know who you're writing for. For instance, when I was writing UR, I knew that it would be people like the Ensemble Moderne, who are like another version of my ensemble in Germany. In L.A., I knew that the L.A. Master Chorale would have to get freelance L.A. pianists and percussionists, and they are some of the best in the world. Kronos is Kronos. I love them. And when I wrote particularly Triple Quartet, after having worked with them already, I mean, it was a labor of love, and I had them in mind, and, you know, they really played it, and they loved the piece, and, you know, we were on the same wavelength. When I was writing for the orchestras, all the above was not the case. And really, I've stopped writing for the orchestra since 1987, mostly for good orchestration reasons. I don't need 18 verse violins. I need one, or possibly three, amplified. Why? Because I need rhythmic agility and clarity of attack. And you don't get that with 18 verse violins. It's not about that. 18 verse violins is about having a romantic, full section sound. So writing for the orchestra, for me, is bad orchestration. People say, well, you don't need to amplify the violin. Why don't you just have, you know, more of them? Well, the answer is if you have more of them, you lose that edge, you lose that rhythmic clarity, and the music gets muddy and a mess. So four sections is okay, three movements is okay, but they are not amongst my best pieces. And any orchestra comes and commissions me, asks to commission me, I say, thank you very much, I'm delighted. But look, I'm going to write for about 30 people, I'm going to demand amplification. You'll do it once, you'll have a headache, you'll grit your teeth. Why bother? I'd rather write it for the Ensemble Moderne, Lennon Sinfonietta. These kinds of ensembles are growing. I just came back from one in Riga, Latvia that I mentioned to you. And this is my orchestra, the amplified ensemble of anywhere from, you know, half a dozen up to 30 musicians. That's the sound I want. That's the best orchestration for the music that I write. And it's my obligation as a craftsman to do that. By the by, I don't care for the sociology that accompanies the orchestra. When there are too many people on stage, the attention is not the same. Chamber music, even if there's a conductor, is when there are fewer people around and you can really hear what's going on and you pay attention to other people. And less is more in the sense in which musicians rely on each other for cues. Music for 18 is an extreme example of that. There's no conductor. There are 18 people. They have audible cues to play together. And that is the spirit. I mean, I certainly have conductors for lots of pieces, but the players have a kind of chamber music mentality because there aren't so many of them on stage.
Steve, there's something poetic about you wanting fewer musicians. And I haven't asked it. Minimalism. Is it making the most out of little?
First of all, you know, don't ask me. Go ask Michael Nyman, who invented the term, or go ask, you know, anybody any journalist or music historian. These terms are not invented by composers, or if they are, the composers should be taken to a mental institution. They're invented by journalists and by music historians, you know, usually by looking at the painting and sculpture of a period and seeing an analogy to the music. So we have, you know, Renoir and Monet, and pretty soon you've got the French Impressionists, who somehow, and there is some feeling of similarity between them and Debussy and Ravel and Satie and so on and so forth. But, you know, what's the real connection? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, who cares? You know, it's just that it's a group of musicians who have some similarity in harmonic practice and style, and they got this name. And what's really interesting, if you like the music, is how different Satie is from either Debussy or Ravel, and how different Ravel and Debussy are. So if you don't like the music, it's all French Impressionism, and so what else is new? Same thing with Schoenberg, Berger, and Webern. They were called Expressionists because of the German Expressionist painters. Schoenberg was himself a painter, part of the Blauer Reiter group, which was an Expressionist group. And so they became the Expressionists. I think people were looking, certainly Nyman was looking at people like Frank Stella and Sol LeWitt and seeing the geometric aspects of their painting and sculpture, and saying, well, this music is sort of an analog to that kind of painting and sculpture. Another, you know, taking term from the visual arts and applying it to the musical arts. The term may have some, you know, significance if you talk about It's Gonna Rain, Come Out, violin phase, piano phase, clapping music, even up to drumming, let's say, the first three movements. But by the time you get to the desert music or different trains or, you know, or You Are Variations or Tahalim, no one in the world would ever call them that. But because, you know, something happened earlier on, it's called minimalism, you know, forever.
Double Sextet by Steve Reich is scored for two sextets of flute, clarinet, violin, cello, vibraphone, and piano. It won the 2009 Pulitzer Prize for Music and was commissioned by 8th Blackbird. Double Sextet by Steve Reich. We heard 8th Blackbird on What's New. Find out more about the CD and hear our podcasts at WBAA.org. We're celebrating Steve Reich on this episode and have time for two works, one inspired by Stephen Sondheim and one remix. From the ECM release Sondheim Reimagine, we'll hear Finishing the Hat with pianist Anthony DeMare. And from Reworks, Steve Reich's drumming, remixed by Patricia Bummel on What's New. Two selections, Patricia Bummel's remix of Steve Reich's drumming, and before that, Anthony DeMare's performance of Steve Reich's Finishing the Hat on What's New. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yon and Kevin Howard. The content director and executive producers, Greg Kostraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.